All right. So happy Thursday. Welcome to Limitless episode 13, the creation killers, right? And so today we're going to talk about all the things that kill our hopes and dreams and all the things that we really want in life. And it really comes down to a couple simple things, nine simple things. And so before we dive in here, if you are new here, you don't know who I am. My name is Logan Manzanares. I'm a business owner, I'm a business professional, transformed well over 2,000 people's lives through this little thing we call health and fitness. I'm a real estate investor, a husband, a father, and one of the most grateful people on this planet. And today I am joined by my two awesome, lovely, strong, but beautiful co-hosts, Mr. John Bodnar and Mr. Tim Cruz. And so without further ado, I'll let them introduce themselves. We'll start with John first.
All right. My name is John Bodnar, and I am a coach at BSB Wealthy Body Coaching. And my purpose in life, what drives me, is to help people break their limiting beliefs and change their bodies and minds by learning how to access the highest and best versions of themselves.
Yeah, buddy. Thank you for being on here, Mr. John Bodnar. And Tim, who are you, my friend?
I am Coach Tim with BSB Wealthy Body Coaching. And first off, I'm very happy that Logan mentioned us being beautiful or pretty, because I'm more than just a piece of meat that can lift up heavy weights. I am a self-admitted meathead. I love lifting, picking heavy things up, setting it back down. But what I'm really passionate about is serving people, meeting them where they're at and helping them manifest the best version of themselves. And when I say best, I mean healthiest, wealthiest, and the strongest versions of themselves from all aspects. So hopefully we're just going to dive in and just crush it today and really change some lives.
Let's go. All right. And so the creation killers, this second one is really going to be really cool. I think this is going to be one of the most popular ones, because ultimately it's really fun to talk about the things we want, but people love talking about the things they don't want. And so this is basically what creation killers is a lot about, like, what the things are holding us back. And I think there's actually a lot of value in knowing the things that hold us back, because once we know those things, we actually can look for them in anticipation of eliminating them and then really focusing on what we do want. So without further ado, let's go ahead and let's dive in. So it's about the law of attraction, creation killer. So the law of attraction, creation killer, is attracting more of what you don't want. So you attract more of what you don't want because you don't know what you really do want. Ironically, this is the very first one, because it's probably like the most obvious one. And so when you stop complaining or focusing on what you don't want, and you start putting your attention on what you do want, what ends up happening is you get what you want. It's pretty crazy. Right. So, John, I'll let you take this one and tell a story, tell a lesson, whatever you want to do. Just share what you think about attracting more of what you don't want.
So I've used this analogy before with the law of attraction, and it's actually, I guess it is a story too. So when I was learning how to ride a bike, I was older than most kids. I didn't learn until I was 7 or 8, and I was very embarrassed by that. So then, of course, every time I'd get on a bike and learn, I'd get mad really easily, because I was embarrassed and frustrated. And what would end up happening is, it's like, okay, I'm going down the driveway. I grew up with a pretty long driveway and a lot of trees on the side. And I was just thinking, like, oh, I really don't want to hit a tree. Please don't hit a tree. Like, that's the last thing I want to do. And of course, I would look at the tree, and because that's not what I wanted. And then I would, of course, drive right into it. And that happened on one very specific occasion, but it happened more than once, right? I would go where I didn't. And the point is, like, yeah, if that's all you're focused on is what you don't want, it doesn't really matter if you're positively or negatively focused on something. If you're focused on it, it's going to find its way into your life.
Yeah, that's fire. Tim, give me an example, or just what comes to mind when you think of attracting more of what you don't want.
So I think it's so commonly known that it borders on cliche of where your focus goes, your energy flows. And kind of a really good analogy of that. Okay, so imagine you got yourself a new car. Who's got the most recently got a new vehicle?
Probably John.
John.
Yeah.
What kind of vehicle did you get?
It's a Subaru Outback.
An Outback. Okay. So, and that's a great example, because we live in Montana. So tell me this: when you got that Outback, did you notice how many Outbacks were on the road after you got that vehicle?
Oh yeah. They're all over the place.
Yeah. But there's something that happens, and there's a name for it. It's your reticulating something axis in your brain. It's very Tony Robbins. But when you acquire something new, all of a sudden you start recognizing that everywhere in your present. The truth is, people had Outbacks before you had Outbacks. They were probably just as prevalent, but now your mind is now aware of that vehicle because now you have it. Your focus is on that car. So now you notice them freaking everywhere. I had the same thing. I got a Tacoma and I noticed like, oh my gosh, everybody has a Tacoma. I thought I was like unique and special, but it turns out I'm just a normal Montana boy. Like everybody has a Tacoma. But the same thing rings true when it comes to the law of attraction, whether it's negative or positive, right? So kind of a good real world example of how this can be deleterious to us is, for instance, we're all in a relationship, right? So you two are married. I have a girlfriend, so not quite married.
But you're pre-married.
Pre-married. I'm in the interview process.
Yeah.
So we'll just say, okay, you can focus on every. No one's perfect. No one's perfect. We all have flaws. We all have shortcomings, limitations. And when you focus on the things that are wrong in a relationship, you end up finding more things wrong in the relationship to the point where if you actually keep focusing on it, it will destroy and completely just dissolve the entire relationship. I've seen it happen to myself. It's happened to other people that I know. It's very common. But if you flip that and you start focusing on what you're grateful for within the person or within the relationship, it ends up perpetuating and becoming even more of a blessing than a curse, to the point where it builds the relationship stronger. This is the same thing we're talking about when it comes to health, wealth, and happiness, right? Like with fitness, with weight loss, like the more we focus on what we want, the more evidence we find of it already occurring in our life, and it just perpetuates it to another level, makes it much easier to keep going. Conversely, if you find evidence of like, oh, this is hard, or like all the evidence of maybe I'm not making progress fast enough, like you just start finding more evidence of things that are wrong with your situation, and you inevitably, just like with a relationship, you can dissolve and just completely implode what you're trying to do.
Yeah, I was gonna have an example, but I think that literally just was perfect. So that really summed it up, is like what you focus on. Really simple. I think those are great analogies, 100%. So ultimately, like focus, like it's, you literally make the choice every single day, right? You have to focus on, again, all the negative things like Tim talked about. There's always negatives. There's always positives. Like your choice is deciding which one you're going to focus on. So, all right, let's talk about the next one. So law of alignment, creation killer, is clinging to false beliefs, right? So basically continue to be okay with beliefs that don't serve you. This allows these false beliefs to dictate your life. And so basically learn how to uncover and destroy every false belief that doesn't serve you. And so a good example of this, like, is like when people speak over themselves, like, oh, like I'm just not the type of person who's willing to like cook grocery or to cook all my meals. I'm not the type of person who is willing to prep my food. I just like don't have time, right? Like all these limiting beliefs, false beliefs, is like what I call those, like speaking over yourself inherently. Like, do those things serve you? And most people understand that that doesn't serve you. That doesn't help you, saying that things, but you continue to like embrace that identity and hug it like it's some magical superpowers. But does it serve you, right? No. And then once you understand it doesn't serve you, then it's your job to say, okay, this doesn't serve me. So what does serve me, right? What is a belief that does serve me? And really own it, because ultimately, like, it is literally your choice to believe that other thing with it. Like, it was funny. I'll tell you guys a quick story. So when I was down in Utah last week with Chris Crone, we're at the dinner table. It was like family size. Like, it was insane, actually, right? That's a whole other story amongst itself, that you literally couldn't see the table because there's so much freaking food on this table. But somebody asked Chris about peas, right? And peas, and he's like, oh, like, I don't like peas, right? And then all of a sudden someone challenged him on it, and he's like, no, you know what? I do like peas, right? And when they started eating peas, like, I love peas. I make the choice right now to like and enjoy peas. And it was like something so simple. It was like, just like that. I was like, oh, it's a choice, right? Like, you have a choice to say, I don't like peas. I have a choice to say, you know, I'm not that person who grocery shops. Guess what? Go to the freaking grocery store. Like, make yourself that person right now, right today. You literally have that choice every single day. I think that's super powerful to just be like, oh, like, does that belief serve me that I don't like peas? Does this belief serve me that I'm not good at grocery shopping? No, change it then. Boom, I'm a great grocery shopper. I'm a magical grocery shopper. I am the best grocery shopper on the planet. Boom, I go to the grocery store, right? Like, whatever it is, like whatever you need to sell yourself on, because ultimately, like, you have that choice. So, Tim, if you want to, when you think about clinging to false beliefs, like, what are some of the things that you think of?
So whenever I hear a client or somebody I'm working with say, I call them identifying statements, like saying things like, I am fat, or I suck at this, or I'm not good at this, I instantly lean in, because that's a cue to me that they have a limiting belief in that realm. And I love how you said that, like, you're speaking over yourself, right? Like, especially when you say, I am, any kind of I am statement is saying like, I identify as this, this is my identity. And our actions actions, they stem from our beliefs. And so if you automatically say like, I'll cut somebody off. If they say I'm fat, I'm like, no, you're not fat. You have fat, but you are not fat. Because once you say I am fat, you are now identifying as a fat person. And guess what fat people do? They make fat people decisions. No, I am a wealthy body who has fat. So therefore I am making wealthy body decisions rather than fat people decisions. And I know that's kind of harsh terminology, but that's how people talk to themselves. So kind of like one of the things that like really held me back, kind of a little personal anecdote is, so for those of you who don't know, I used to own a gym, right? Back in Reno, Nevada. And one of the, like that gym under a bunch of circumstances ended up getting shut down by the landlord. They wanted to bring in a new tenant. So they kicked everybody out. They gave us no notice. And so I considered myself a failure. And so I would tell myself that I can't trust my decisions. Like I make bad decisions. And instead of saying like that was outside of my circumstances, I still can trust myself. I still make good decisions. I would literally tell myself like I can't trust myself. And that made its way into every single facet of my life, not just with business. It made my way into relational decisions that I would make, it would be more or less like not making the decision that I should make because I literally couldn't trust myself. And it's one of the things that my therapist, my coach, and I have been working through. And actually we came to a breakthrough literally less than a half an hour ago, getting to the point where instead of believing that, because cognitively it doesn't serve me to believe I can't trust my decision-making ability. But that's not enough. Just understanding that doesn't serve you is not enough. You have to replace that with a positive belief in its place. So you have something to combat that thought that crops into your head. So the terminology or the affirmation that I use to replace that is I am valuable. I am trustworthy. And those are things. So I know moving forward, those negative C's are still going to pop up in my head whenever I'm faced with a challenging decision. And I will have to squash that thought and then replace it right away. And I know if I've shown you guys this before, but this little wristband right here, it's more than just a fashion statement. When I have those thoughts that pop in my head, those self-limiting beliefs, I will literally grab the sucker and snap myself. It stings a little bit, but it's more of a pattern interrupt to stop that train of thought. And then I intentionally jump in and replace that with a positive affirmation. So a lot to unpack there, but the basic takeaways is ask yourself, does this serve you? But then on top of that, you need to replace that with something, a belief that actually does serve you.
That's fire. That's fire. Love that. And that snapping thing is awesome. I think we all wear wristbands. I think that snapping is actually like a good reminder. Like when you get into the moment, it's like, no, right? That's good. That's a nugget I'm taking from this call. I like that. John, your thoughts?
Yeah. So Tim, really what you said about, not only understanding it doesn't serve you, because that is only the first half, but replacing it is really important. And it's actually making me realize that for a long, long time, I had that understanding that what I was believing about myself didn't serve me. Things like, you know, I can't do it. I get overwhelmed easily. I don't have control over my actions. Those are limiting beliefs that I used to have. But I knew that. It's like, this is bad. I shouldn't be thinking this way. It doesn't help me, but I didn't do anything about it. So instead what would happen is, okay, so I believe these things. I feel really bad about it. And I don't have anything to replace it with. So it actually just got worse because I knew it was a problem, but I didn't feel like I had anything to lean back on to actually fix it. So then I just chose to dwell on the beliefs and really live in them. And they became even more true. So it's more of a cautionary statement is like, yeah, understand it doesn't serve you, but you have to have something to fall back on or else you're just going to fall into it more.
And in reality, how long did that take you to think, like honestly sit there and think, what is a belief that will serve you? Did it take that long?
No, it doesn't take long at all. Sometimes it takes some time to find the perfect wording, something that really sticks with you. But what took a long time was to get to the point where I was even doing that at all, sitting down and thinking about it.
Right.
And ultimately the law of alignment is literally the baseline of the belief breakthrough process. It's literally just like uncovering what are these, like a lot of times when we first start, like they're really easy because it's just like, okay, that's really easy. I don't have time. I'm a fat person, but I just start to like dive deeper, deeper, deeper. It's a lot of our subconscious, our unconscious beliefs that actually are holding us back. And so that's where we get into the belief breakthrough process where we find these like, oh, I didn't even realize that I use negativity to fuel me. Right. Or I didn't even realize that I'm not worthy. Right. It's like, obviously you start to think of like these things that are not actually conscious to you or in front of your face, you're able to find that through the blue-painted process. And that is like that's what the law of alignment really is truly, it's just uncovering, or excuse me, that's what the blue-painted process is really uncovering these false limiting beliefs. So, all right, law of choice and accountability. Creation killer is the blame game. And so when you blame other people or circumstances for the results in your life, you give away your personal power. So if you want to keep your personal power, accept 100% responsibility for your behavior and choices, which is one of our which one of our core values. So Tim, let's leave this one here. When you think of the blame game, what do you think of?
So I think this is for me. These are all very obviously logically sequential, but this is what I'm after. Really is ownership, 100% ownership and personal responsibility. So does that mean you're going to be perfect? Does that mean you're going to make the right decision every single time? Absolutely not. But what it means is you have the power to change. And I think unless you have this fundamental pillar, from a mindset point of view, nothing matters beyond this point. So when I'm working with a client or someone who's just starting out, this is ultimately what we're after is that personal responsibility. Because it doesn't matter what I can give you, what plan I give you, what diet, what exercise routine. If you don't take responsibility for where you're at right now and understand fully that you have the power to change your circumstances, it doesn't matter because you're always going to be reliant on something or someone else to give you your results. And that's why we see this constant yo-yo. I mean, the average woman diets 5 times a year. And I think that what's the success rate is something like 3% of people that go on diets hit their results and they still gain all their weight back within 2 years. It's dismal. And the reason is because they're like, oh, it must be the diet's fault. It must be my training partner. They just can't show up on time. Or, you know, this kid's had school today. And yes, those are all like facets of life for sure. We all have things that come up, but until you take responsibility for where you're at, it doesn't matter. Like you're always going to be relying on someone else and you can't rely on anybody else. So you're setting yourself up for failure. So I find this is like the core, the cornerstone of the entire foundation that is this belief breakthrough process.
Yeah, I agree. John, what are your thoughts on this one?
I can't say much better than Tim in terms of taking responsibility. So now let's say, okay, I do take responsibility. Then you blame yourself for where you're at, which you can start there. That's fine. But if you just sit there and think like that's where more limiting beliefs can come up as well. So it's a delicate process. It's like, oh, well, it's my fault. Yeah. So I must just be, you know, a lazy person. I must just not care. That's one that I've heard a lot from clients and prospects is like, I must just not care enough. Otherwise I'd be doing this. It's like, that's not the case. But once you start to take the responsibility, but look at it as a negative, it can be a pretty detrimental process. And so where you have to go next is say 100% responsibility. That means you do have the ability to change it. I know it's not technically in the word, but it's responsibility. Mm-hmm. But it does give you that power to say, yeah, it's within my ability to do so. That's really what responsibility means. Yeah. It doesn't mean it's your burden. It means it's your power.
I think that's really important to bring up that it can be like self-defeating if you stay. Right. If you stay in that like that defeatist mentality, because ultimately you're blaming yourself, but you're not taking ownership of your situation. And this was probably like 5-6 months ago when we had the event there at BSB. The way that Logan put it was I freaking loved it. And I use this all the time now when I'm talking to my clients is all we're looking for is forward progress. Like if we stand still, we're actually moving backwards. Forward progress doesn't mean leaps and bounds forward. It could literally just mean taking just a little tiny baby step forward every single day. So if you're at square one and you make it to square two, that's still forward progress. And I think a lot of times people think in terms of like, I need to be perfect now versus understanding that all of this is a skill that we need to build. You wouldn't expect to be a major league baseball, like home run king on your first year at the plate. Like it's going to take thousands and thousands of reps to incrementally increase that skill set. It's the same with our habits. We're going to start with just getting into a couple good habits and then get into a couple more and then a couple more and every single one compounds on itself. And who knows, 6 months down the road, you might be perfect, but don't expect that right now because you're literally just going to set yourself up for feeling like a failure. So just that baby 1 degree of change every single day.
Yeah. And it's interesting you said that because I'll be curious. I don't quite remember which next slide, but like those false expectations, that's going to be another creation killer. But with that being said, like all these actually work together, right? So they're not independent of each other. And so basically what you guys just said there is that, well, we take responsibility, we blame ourselves, but we go back here, right? Is saying that, you know, I'm a loser or I'm whatever, like, does that serve you? So then you change that belief, right? And then so that like ultimately these all really, they piggyback on each other, which I think is cool. And hopefully the next one is false expectations. It's coming up.
So what's the win there, Logan? How do you keep from being like, dang, I made a bad guess?
Oh, on this one? I don't think it personal. Just have fun. And honestly, that's another thing is like always finding gratitude and having humor. Like, it's okay, yeah. Right? It's good. All right. Law of faith, creation killer is waiting to see before believing, right? And so waiting to see our creation before believing it will result in life, nothing happening. So it's like a good example of this would be like, I'll start acting like a fit person when I'm a fit person. Right. I'll start acting like a wealthy person when I'm a wealthy person. You know, I'll start waking up early when all of a sudden I start getting some momentum. You know, I'll basically do conditional things. Like it basically becomes conditional, right? Your love, your respect, your intentions become conditional based on something else. And like those conditions will cripple you, right? And so ultimately you must turn it around. You must actually be able to believe things before you see them. And this is a big piece of visualization. It's super important. It's like something that I remember, like I actually remember the moment when it hit me. It wasn't long ago, to be honest with you. It was probably like year and a half, maybe in that time frame. I remember watching a YouTube video, and I can't remember who the girl was by. She's pretty famous, but she basically says that all the high performers, all top performers in the world, they have one special thing in common, and they all visualize, right? They all are able to like sit there and actually spend time, they dedicate time to visualize their future and to see themselves winning the game or writing the check, right? Like Jim Carrey's got a great story, right? Jim Carrey's got a great story where before he was ever on TV, before he was anything, he wrote himself a $1 million check, right? And just like wrote it to him, sat there and looked at it as like a great visual representation of like, here, like I'm gonna write myself a $1 million check. And it's just like that, like those kind of things seem silly until all of a sudden someone writes you a $1 million check. And you're like, all right, I just need to start writing myself like $1 million checks all day long, right? But as simple as it sounds, nobody does it. And something I've been doing, again, I don't remember how long, year and a half-ish, and it's been so powerful to be able to like be in this moment and feel those feelings of like what it actually feels like to accomplish those goals. And you see it, and all of a sudden you start believing it, because ultimately like your mind is funny. It doesn't know the difference between what actually is reality versus what you picture in your head, right? Like it's why people think of movies and TV shows as real, right? Because we see them on TV, or see them on the internet, and all of a sudden we think it's real. But like, did you actually see it in person? Did you touch it? Did you feel it? No, but you believe it. Right. And like all that is a picture that's on a monitor, like you're watching this now, but we have these same monitors in our brains. And so being able to truly visualize these things, it makes it become real, because it makes it seem like, oh, I can do this. And then all of a sudden you start to believe it up here. Like Tim said this earlier, like once you believe it up here, all of a sudden that changes the way you speak. It changes the way your actions, right? All of a sudden, if you believe it up here, you act with 100% commitment rather than being like, I'm not sure if I can do this. Right. There's a difference between those two things. So that's why the law of faith is super important. And like, honestly, waiting for it to happen, like waiting to be this person, once you get there, is like, it's a sin, right? It's like, you don't get to be a wealthy body when you get to your goal. You get to start being a wealthy body today. That's the choice you get to make. So yeah, John, give me your feedback on that.
So when it comes to weight loss or just getting in shape, one thing that I've heard many times is, no, I just, I lack motivation. But I know like if I started seeing results, I'd get really motivated. And that sounds like on the surface, that kind of sounds like a reasonable thing. It's like, yeah, if I got results, I'd be motivated to keep doing what I'm doing. But if that's what you're waiting for, as the slide says, it's never going to happen. Nothing is going to happen if you're waiting for results, because the only thing that can create results is taking the steps now. Like you said, being a wealthy body now, how you get to your goal. And so I like to challenge people on that and say like, okay, like, would it motivate you to say, or if someone told you, hey, do these five things every single day, and this is a lesson that Logan taught me, actually, do these five things every day, or however many things, it's going to take you 5 years to get to your goal. Like, would you do those things every day if you knew you'd get there? Of course you would. But instead, what people are waiting for is like, oh, I'm going to wait 5 years, and if I'm there, then I'll start doing these things. And so it's very, very applicable when it comes to weight loss, because that's a huge motivator, is results. But you are the only one who can make that happen. Not a program. not a specific diet. It's just you.
That whole law of choice and accountability is coming back to bite us again.
Yes, it is.
Tim, since that one is your thing, if you want to go ahead and take it from there.
So on the surface, like even when you guys both said that, I started laughing because it just doesn't make any damn sense. Like wait, you want to be fit before you start acting fit? It's like saying you want to get rich, but you don't want to save money. Like you want to do the things to make money and save that money. But okay, when I'm a millionaire, I'll start acting like a rich person. It doesn't make any damn sense. So like I have so many problems with this mentality, but it's incredibly pervasive. Like I've heard it so many times. And I'm sure there's aspects in all of our lives where we can point to a similar mindset. I don't want to be dismissive of everybody, but I think to kind of hone in on the law of faith, and then there's another one coming up, the law of gestation. They're kind of like sisters in the sense of like, you know, you start doing the things now and then you get the return later. And it's so counter to our culture right now. We live in a very instant gratification, like pay me now before I'm worth it type of situation, versus like if you told this to your grandfather, he'd be like, what? That doesn't make any sense. Like you work hard for 50 years and then you retire. Like that's how it goes. It's the same with diet, with having a healthy body. You're not going to point to a single person that is healthy mentally, physically, and emotionally that didn't put in the freaking work every single day. It just doesn't exist. So I think just coming to terms with that, like, look, you have to have faith. I'm using air quotes, but you have to have faith. You have to start doing the things today. You have to start acting like a healthy, wealthy person right now before you become one later. And then you also have to let that gestate for the duration of time that it actually takes for that thing to occur.
Yeah. And there's something you said that I think is really important. And I actually want to touch on that and actually tell a little story with that is like, okay, when you say it out loud, it just seems silly, right? And it's funny because like to us, it seems silly, but I can see how to other people, it might not seem silly. And like how I saw this show up in my life as recently is like I have goals that I want to donate like a lot of money to charities, right? And it's funny because I got this big epiphany this weekend that like, well, if I want to start being someone who donates to charities, you know, when I'm old, my reason was that when I get rich, then I'll start donating a lot of money to charity, right? And then also I just had this, like, I went through this event, and the seminar I went to, like, one of the speakers, that was this big thing, was like, if you want to be rich, you actually need to give first, right? This is a big Tony Robbins thing. This is a big Chris Cronin thing. Like, actually, all the successful people always say the same thing, right? Like, you need to give first. And then, but in my head, I was always, like, waiting till I got to a certain income level before I was starting to give, and I was like, ah, there it is for me, right? Like, seeing before believing, like, same thing. So, like, basically the message I wanted to say is, like, If you're sitting here, you're watching this, you're like, oh, well, you know, I thought that actually like I thought I needed to see results before I started like putting effort in. Like, I understand that. We all have these blocks, but when all of a sudden you become conscious of it, then it is on you to take the responsibility to say, okay, now I understand this. I got to start acting like a wealthy body before I start looking like a wealthy body, right? I have to become that person today. I need to start giving today before I become a rich person tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And so that's just the full circle that I wanted to come back to, because I think it is important that like sometimes we can't see what we can't see, right? And that's totally fine, right? But once it comes to the surface level and all of a sudden you start to see that this is your issue, then you must take responsibility and accountability and then do something about it. So
I'm glad that you said that, because I knew one of you guys would say something that would like trigger something to me, like, oh yeah, there's the example right there. Yeah. like way back when I first started to go to church, and like the concept of tithing, it's like a principle, and it's like, oh, they're asking me for money every single week. Like, what the hell? And a pastor that I had said, it doesn't matter what you give. Like if you can't give 10% of a dollar, what makes you think that you're going to give $1,000 out of a million? It's the same concept. It's giving up what you want the most to get it back tenfold.
That's what I put it, man. That's really good. Got to have faith in order to do that, though, right?
You can't do it without faith. Yeah.
Yeah. Luckily, we had faith, because the next one up was false expectations, which is the one that I was waiting for. So law of harvest creation killer is false expectations. So we kill our creations because we expect a specific outcome and become attached to that outcome. However, we must work towards our goals without detachment to a specific goal and trusting that whatever outcome we experience is the best for us, right? And so, Tim, let's take this one. What is, when they have false expectations, like what comes to your mind?
So it's kind of really cool because I just had a realization of this exact example. I told you guys this morning on our daily huddle. So 4 years ago, I was working with a guy named Dr. Kashi, which if you guys watch his podcast at all, you know who Dr. Kashi is. He's one of the smartest individuals on this planet. And he told me it was going to be, he asked me what I wanted. And I was like, I really want to be 240 with abs. And at the time, I was maybe 192 skinny fat. Like I wasn't incredibly lean. He was like, okay, it's going to take you about 4 years. And I'm thinking like, you read all the magazines and see all the transformations and like, gosh, that's a long time to gain like 45, 50 pounds. But I completely detached myself away from the timeline because he told me it was going to be a long ways out. So I'm like, well, damn, I can't like think about this in terms of time or else I'm going to probably lose motivation and not go for it in the first place. And this morning, sure enough, I woke up at 240 with a full six pack and it's been exactly 4 years, but I wouldn't have kept doing the thing that I needed to do if I would have been focused on like a 12 week timeline or a 6 month timeline, like having a realistic expectation. I just knew it was going to take work. It was going to take consistency for a really long time. And so that's an example of me detaching myself from the timeline, having a realistic expectation and continuing with it because I had the expectation.
So how long is it going to take me to get 240 with abs and Tim?
Probably 4 years. And a lot of food, Logan, a lot of food.
Yeah.
A lot of insulin shots.
You're going to have to get some insulin.
John, give me your thoughts on the false expectations.
So I've definitely struggled with false expectations in my life, and primarily because the first 18 years of life were very successful and easy for me. And I'm thankful for that, but it did cause some issues in my future what is now my past, but it did cause some issues for the next 6 years. And so things like, oh, you know, I got 4.0 in college or high school. Surely I can just get a 4.0 in college. Was not the case. Had some issues in college. So what's been powerful about this is now that I focus on realistic expectations and getting detached from outcomes, I actually let me back up. I have a really good story. So pretty early on when I started working with you, Logan, I had a pretty tough day. I was in a lot of scenarios where there's like a really clear yes or no outcome. And I really wanted the yes outcome and I got a bunch of no's. And it would have been very easy to get super discouraged. Like, oh, you know, I can't do this. Nobody wants to work with me, things like that. And instead I came home, I was exhausted. I was emotionally beat. And I just gave my wife a hug and she's like, you okay? I said, yeah, I'm just growing. And it was a very memorable moment for me because it's like, yeah, that's exactly what it was. I wasn't exactly in a good mood, but I was able to recognize that all of these no's were just growth opportunities. And I was in the process of growing at that exact moment because I was beat, but I wasn't discouraged. And that's how I encourage everybody to look at undesired outcomes is like, okay, well, I grew today. It might not feel too good, but you have that focus. It's ultimately going to bring you to where it does feel good and you're going to have that opportunity to grow.
So let me ask you this, John, when you do run into those days now, does that make you smile?
Not yet. Sometimes, not every time. Sometimes. And that's actually a good reminder that it should make me smile. You know, when I encounter an obstacle, I should smile. I think let the challenge begin, right?
Exactly.
And if I smile then and I welcome those opportunities, then I'm going to take full advantage of every undesired outcome that I can possibly encounter, which will lead to more desired outcomes, which is great.
Yeah, I just always try to refer things back to like workouts and like exercise. And I remember when I first started training, like back when I was like 13, like that feeling of soreness was such a negative connotation in my brain. And now if I wake up and I'm not sore, I'm like, uh-oh, like I didn't. Like now when I feel sore, I'm like, yeah, give me some of them gains. That's what I think now. So I'm thinking kind of in the same terms of like, when you have a hard day, like getting to that point where like, it's not only like a smile, it's like a hell yes, I got an opportunity to get better today.
Yeah. And this is kind of this is not really along the same lines, but it's more so the ability to laugh at yourself if you need to. I was gearing up for a new bench press PR. This was a while ago, a few months ago. And I was going for five reps and I only got 3, and I felt really off the whole time. I was like, something weird happened. I got 2 fewer than I thought I would, and it was just really odd. So I got up feeling like a little discouraged, but also curious. And I looked, and I put 5 more pounds on one side. And so I was just like, oh, okay. And I smiled. I laughed at myself. I didn't know if anybody noticed or not. I didn't care. I was just like, oh, that makes sense. But it's actually a decent analogy for, yeah, if you don't get the desired outcome, like, you can look for why. You can look for what happened and realize, oh, I need to take 5 pounds off the side and do it again and gear myself up for it again.
Yeah. I think it's awesome. I think both of you guys said it, like, it's right on the money. And I think the big thing is just like truly being detached from specific outcomes. So like your goal is to lose 30 pounds. And like Tim said, as a fireman, it was like, get rid of your timeline. Just say like, if you just put that goal there, I'm going to lose 30 pounds. Excuse me. I shouldn't say get rid of the timeline, because ultimately like a timeline gives you some sort of measure that you're shooting for. So it gives you a destination to go for. But ultimately, if you don't get there in, let's say, 6 weeks, right? Excuse me, not 6 weeks, 6 months, then like readjust your timeline. Like your expectations were off, but like, why were they off? Right. And then adjust it. But don't be detached to a specific outcome, because ultimately it's like, nobody cares about you. You yourself are not going to care about you losing 30 pounds. What you're going to care about is the person you become in the journey to losing 30 pounds. It's going to be all the challenges that you face. And you know what? When you face them, you smile and said, let the challenge begin, right? Like, that's inside our affirmations for a reason. It's like, nobody looks at a person who gets disappointed and says, I want to be like that person. Like, that person got disappointed. They didn't hit their goal. Like, I want to be like them. Nobody says that. You know what everybody wants to be? Like, the person who faced a big challenge, overcame it, and had a good attitude and said, hey, I made it. So can you. And like, that inspires me, right? So like, that's your choice that you get to make, is like, you'll be the person who smiles and overcomes obstacles, or the person who gets disappointed, frustrated, and quits. Like, who's going to be more inspiring? Which one of those people? And ultimately, like, who are you going to be more inspired by? And ultimately, like, all we're doing every single day, what we're doing right now is we're writing our story, right? We're writing our story every single day. And on your deathbed, you get to start to tell your story of what life looked like. What story do you want to write? What's where you want to tell? That's what you get to do every single time. And these obstacles are your opportunities. They're the things that are like the highlights of your book, right? Because having a boring little book where you just get to like go like this, you get to coast. Like John said, you got to coast for the first 18 years. Like, I don't want to read that book. That book's not fun to me. I want to hear the story where John came home after getting told no 10 freaking times and then told his wife, I'm growing. Like, that's funny, right? And ultimately he did, right? And he overcame it. And now crushed, you got 10 yeses in a row. Right? That's a story that I want to read, right? And I'll be honest with you, that's a story that I want to tell. And so I think that's really important to understand when it comes to false expectations. All right, let's start with the law of purpose, right? Law of purpose, caution, or excuse me, the creation killer is satisfying the ego, right? And so when we seek fulfillment in external things such as status, prestige, money, comfort, we end up pursuing the wrong opportunities, okay? We compare ourselves and judge others and compete with them. And ultimately, what we must do is we must follow what truly makes us happy and find our true purpose in life. So, John, what do you think about when you see this?
The most relatable part to me is comparing to others, whether it's physical, whether it's with status, you know, whether it's with money. And it's something that I know a lot of people struggle with too. When I'm talking to clients or prospects, they say like, oh, you know, my sister's really fit. And, you know, I'm not the fit sibling. And then there's an identity issue with identifying as the unfit sibling and limiting beliefs. And when you compare yourself on the other side of it, like, oh, I'm better than this person, or hey, like, I'm in better shape than this person, you're still not doing yourself a favor. Because the only opinion you should care about in terms of comparison is how you were compared to your past. And so rather than satisfy the ego, look at those little steps every day. Look at how much further along you are than a month ago, 6 months ago, a year ago, a decade ago, and just be grateful for that. But if you're instead saying like, oh yeah, finally, like, I got abs, this guy doesn't have abs and he's a rival, like, hey, I'm so much better. You don't find any fulfillment in that. It brings you nowhere. And it instead instills like these false positive beliefs in a way, which are still limiting.
And ultimately, like, for purpose, right? When it comes to purpose, I think it's important that we understand what purpose is, and what purpose is like true fulfillment, the things that get you excited, things that like, you can go a whole day and you don't even realize that the time just passes, right? And ultimately, I like to use that same example, the person who had abs, the person who was born with abs versus the person who went from, you know, overweight, 100 pounds overweight to getting abs. Like, which one of those people do you think actually the abs fulfill the most?
The people who struggle for it.
And do you think it's because of the abs that they actually are fulfilled?
No.
What are they fulfilled
by? Not even a little bit. By the process, by the journey, by their ability to, like, what it took to get there is the fulfilling piece.
And if you were to summarize that into one word, what would you call that word?
What word? Which piece?
When you, like what it took to get there. Like, what is that? You just said earlier.
I did? Well, I would say purpose or fulfillment.
Yeah, but growth. Growth is what
growth.
Growth is what you get from fulfillment, right?
Okay.
Or
fulfillment is what you get from growth.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's what it's all about, is like finding what truly grows you. Again, so when you find your purpose, it's like, what grows that purpose, right? Because it's not just like you, it's not a goal. It's not an achievement. That's not what purpose is. Achievement is like, it's like this thing that continues to grow and continues to grow inside you. Usually it's just like you personally, like, it's just like, how do you continue to grow? So Tim, what are your thoughts on satisfying the ego?
So the first thing that comes up, first thought that comes up in my mind is, you guys are familiar with John Lennon, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the writer for the Beatles. So he tells this story when he was a kid. He was in, I think it was kindergarten or first grade, and the teacher was having them do an exercise on what they wanted to be when they grew up. And all the other kids were writing down like firefighter, policeman. And John Lennon wrote down, I want to be happy. And he turned it in and the teacher was like, John, like, I don't think you understand the assignment. And Lennon said to the teacher, no, I don't think you understand life. Which was fire. And especially from a young kid like that, right? And so when I think of happiness, happiness is more of an equation than it is a summation. So it's your wants divided by your haves, right? So we can increase happiness by either increasing our haves or decreasing our wants. And when we think about false desires or ego-driven, like external things like money, prestige, power, influence, like those are all very they're false parts of our ego, right? So like using the abs analogy, let's say you got yourself an awesome set of abs. Well, guess what? There's going to be probably 100,000 people out there with better abs than you still. You're not going to have the best abs. Like for me, like I would fancy myself a pretty strong dude, but if I look at myself compared to like Julius Maddox or Larry Wheels, who are some of the strongest individuals on the planet, like my, you know, 455 bench press looks like what they can curl. Like it's not that strong. So if that is my external focus, I'm always going to want more than what I have. Now, when we talk about fulfillment, increasing things like relationships, like how much gratitude we have, like those things are going to be very positive drivers. And they're very fulfilling because I can look at myself and be like, I'm super grateful. But Logan, even the way that he identifies, is I am the most grateful person on the planet. That doesn't make me envious. That doesn't make me jealous. Not one bit. I'm just happy for him that he's grateful. Yeah. I'm always looking for ways to be more grateful in my life, but it's not a quantitative thing that I can ever achieve. So yeah, when I think about all of this, like it does nothing to get in amazing shape if you're driven by only being in amazing shape. It all depends on the personal development that you undergo in the process of getting in amazing shape. So like I would say for me when I was younger, so when I graduated high school, I was pretty over fat. I was like 260 something pounds and maybe 25, 30% body fat. And that might be a generous estimation. I initially got into all this health and fitness stuff because I was tired of being fat. I was tired of being like looking at myself and being disgusted in the mirror. Like I felt gross all the time. So my attempt, I shouldn't say an attempt because I was damn successful. I got down to like 172 in less than 6 months. Like I lost a ton of weight, but I was still just as insecure at 172 as I was at 260. In fact, I probably was more so because I'd lost the muscle that I thought I had as well. And now as I'm detaching myself away from that external goal, even though literally what I do is bodybuilding, it's pretty much all external, I fixate and I get very attached to the process, to the day-to-day, the doing the do, and judge success based off of how much better I am getting at being routine, being habitual, and then including things like, how do I talk to myself? All of the internal stuff. Like if I honestly, outside of the competition aspect, if my body never changed for the rest of my life, I'd be content and happy. And I think if we're not content and happy, what's the point of doing anything?
There's like two words in there that I'm like, I really love. And there's something like that I really preach in my personal life and I preach to my family specifically is detachment, right? That's the first one. And being detached from status, prestige, and money and comfort. That's the key word, right? Being detached from abs, being detached from looking a certain way in the mirror is super important. Because what it means is that your identity is not dependent on those things. So if you were to lose all your money, you were to lose your house, you were to lose your abs, that you don't lose your identity. You don't lose yourself, right? That's the first one, right? So that detachment is super powerful. And the thing of it, in the other word is external, right? Because external are things that you can't necessarily control, right? Like status, prestige, money, like what people talk about. So those are externals. And so when you focus inward, when you focus on the internals, you know what you can control? You control your thoughts, your beliefs, your words, your actions. When you focus on, you focus inward, also you can create true happiness. And that's what it means to be happy right now, is that you're able to control these things right here. Because you can't control how much money you make. You can't control, what people think about you or what your status is. Like, those are externals, right? But you can't control this right here. Now, I think there's another piece of this too. So like the next question is like, well, can I not just have those things? Can I not, like, does that mean that it's bad for me to have money or have prestige or have status? Absolutely not, right? Like, you just need to be detached from those as your identity. Those are your preference. It's like, my preference is to make a lot of money. My preference is that I want people to think I'm awesome, right? But if someone, like, if John doesn't think I'm awesome, it's not going to shape my identity. It's not going to hurt my feelings, because you know what? I know internally that I'm doing the things I need to do. I'm thinking the thoughts I need to think. I'm thinking the words I need to do. I'm doing the action I need to do in order for me to feel good about myself. Right now, I would prefer for John to feel happy about me as well, but like, he's not going to change my identity. I think that's the difference.
Right? That puts it super clear, actually. Like, yeah, because there's nothing wrong with wanting money, but it has to be a preference. That's a perfect distinction. I love that.
And in psychology, they call this the difference between external and internal locus of control. So where do you get your identity from?
Exactly. That's why it's always important to look inward, just like you said. Like, focus on the do's, the things that you can control. Like, you can wake up, you can eat the right things, right? Like, those are the things you have total control over, right? All right. Law of intuition creation killer is relying on logic. So when we get stuck, it's because we're using logical thinking alone. We must really learn to trust our intuition, our hearts, to lead us to the promised land. So Tim, give your thoughts on relying on logic.
So this speaks to my logical brain very well. And it's something that this is probably something that I haven't really grasped fully yet, but have came to the realization or the epiphany through therapy, honestly, over the course of the last 8 months. So, and this had to do with mostly self-limiting beliefs and past trauma and things that I had went through. And I would try to logic my way out of those situations, right? More control, more execution, like all of the things I've been taught and like rely on and very good at, when in reality, our brains are amazing. Our internal, like our hardware and our software are very well evolved. They know exactly what to do with information if we just get our logical brain out of the way. So we have like our frontal lobe. That's the most recent evolutionary development in human beings. But before that, you have your pre-cortex. You also have your limbic system, your amygdala, like the hindbrain, the reptilian brain, the emotional centers of your brain that are not governed by logic at all. And so one of the things with a belief breakthrough process that is so powerful is learning how to detach or get your logical brain out of the way and let your brain process emotions, process self-limiting beliefs from an emotional level. And then logically, it just all works out. Like, it, all those things are able to actually release. So when we think about this in terms of like fitness and weight loss, behind all this, all the laws of creation, these creation killers are generally self-limiting beliefs, things that you have told yourself, stories that you have told yourself, reasons that you've told yourself, which are all coming from your logical center of your brain. And learning really to get that out of the way and let your brain kind of process it the way that it was actually evolved to do it.
that's fire. I love that. John, any follow up to that?
Yeah, I have an instinctual problem to say, like, oh, don't rely on logic, because logic is what gets us to the right conclusion. But really, the kind of along the lines of what Tim was saying is your intuition is logical. You just have to trust that it's logical, because it's taking in all of the information that we need and puts it in a funnel, spits out the right answer most of the time. And it does so in a way that consciously we're simply not capable of. And trusting my intuition, trusting my gut has been a challenge for me, mostly in conversation. If I'm having a difficult conversation and I know I need to say something at a certain moment, I get stuck because I'm trying to logically think, what do I need to say? What do I need to say? When instead my gut's right that I need to say something, and then just say something, and it's going to get me in the right direction. It literally doesn't matter what I say in that moment, provided it's not the exact wrong thing. And so if you're someone who struggles with the idea of letting go of logic, you're not letting go of logic, you're letting go of your control of it and actually putting it in the hands of a more logical machine.
Yeah, it was a very articulate way of saying what I was trying to say. Really, what do we get? Like something like 30,000 data points coming through every minute into our brain. So our brains have been hardwired to filter out like so many things and only focus on the pertinent information, when our rest of our brain is still processing all of that information. So it maybe getting logic out of the way is the wrong way to say it. And the way that you said it, of your control of logic, is a better way to articulate that.
Yeah. And the only thing that I'll add in there is just understanding that it's a skill. It's a skill to be able to rely and trust your intuition and like trust that gut feeling. And like, again, like just because you have a gut feeling and it turns out to be a decision that maybe doesn't make sense for that moment, like it doesn't matter, because ultimately like all it is just you trusting yourself, because trusting yourself is more important than that decision is right or wrong. I think that's like the big takeaway that I like, if I can like plant one thing in your seed from this specific law of creation, is that like the outcome is irrelevant. The trust in yourself is the most important thing. And so the more you continue to trust your intuition, trust your gut, and do it over and over again, it gives you the courage, the belief to actually do things that nobody thinks you can do, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's really the key, because decisions, and be able to make as many decisions as you possibly can, is the key to being successful in anything, right? And like Tim talked about earlier, it's like procrastinating, putting things off. Like that's what most people do when they don't want to make a mistake, or when they don't want to confront whatever needs to be confronted. It's like, you just need to get out there and just do it. Make the decision. Doesn't matter. Like, it actually does not matter if it's wrong or right. Like, making a decision is better than you not making a decision whatsoever. Like, that's the right thing to do.
So. Yeah, because behind that layer is literally what you just said. They don't trust that they can do the right thing, that they can actually make the decision correctly. Correct. And if, even if they made the wrong decision, the trust is more important.
That's right. And trust yourself to handle the wrong outcome properly as well. Like it's like trusting your intuition, but your intuition also kind of needs to trust you in a way to be like, hey, if I'm wrong, don't abuse me. Like we'll fix it together. And that's actually kind of I like that. I'm going to use that for myself.
I'm a solution finder, right? It just gives you the opportunity to be a solution finder, which is again, another one of our core values. So, all right. Last one here. Law of connection, creation killer, is pride and selfishness. So we kill our connection. We try to do everything as a lone wolf. We live the law of one, and we just live for ourselves, right? What we do need is we need other people to get the things we want in life. The journey is all about us, all of us, not just us individually, but us as a conglomerate, as a team. It's about supporting, uplifting, inspiring one another, and then of course looking for that on the other side as well. It's about getting that love and support back. And so, Tim, what is your thoughts on pride and selfishness as a creation killer?
So I'm going to kind of steer away from pride and selfishness and more talk about trying to do everything as a lone wolf, which I guess is pride and selfishness. Mm-hmm. Behind that is our ego that wants to be, maybe we want to get the accolades, or we want to be the one that made it happen, the moneymaker, the person that the buck starts and stops with. And I know Logan has told this story before, but that was like a growth thing that you've went through drastically. And it's something that I'm going through right now, like just as profoundly, realizing that the currency, like our most valuable currency that we have is relationships. Like relational currency is so much more valuable than monetary or physical health. Like it's the most, it's gold. It's literally gold. And like learning that it's so freaking cool because not only is it more fulfilling, like when you start to build and invest into those relationships, but you just get more done also from a productivity standpoint. And you learn so much more because every single person that you build a relationship with has unique skill set and unique talents and gifts that maybe you don't have that you can add together. And the sum is greater than the sum of all its parts, right? So like 1 + 1 doesn't equal 2, it equals 10. It's going to be way more valuable than if you try to do it all on your own. And I think one of the harder things for people, I would say probably more type A people, is there's a little bit of vulnerability and ego check that's involved. Because what you are also saying is you're admitting your vulnerability and you're admitting, admitting where you're weak, and trying to strengthen those through bonds with other people. But it starts with admitting like where you're good at and what you're not good at. And so like, I think that that's the hard part for people that are ego driven as well.
And there's one thing I'll say, because I know people will be on here. It's like, oh, like money is more important than people is. But let me ask you this question. Who has money?
People. I would say the people with the best relationships, with the most relationships.
But who has the money that you want?
Yeah. Do you think Jeff Bezos got to the place he got without making some really key relationships with other people that helped Amazon get funded and get started?
Who gives Amazon money?
All of us. Well, I know I do. I give them too much money.
John said that actually earlier, but it's people, right? Yeah. Literally, like, if you want money, which again, like, everyone wants money, but guess who has money?
People.
Like, people have your money. People have, like, what you want. And so in order for you, like people just don't give you money. You establish a relationship with somebody and then they give you money, right? And that's why, like, so if someone needs to sell themselves on like that relationship is the most important currency, because honestly, it actually is. Then that's how you sell yourself on. It's like, okay, you want money, great, but guess who's got your money?
Somebody else.
Tom's got your money. Tim's got your money. So you have to go create a relationship with those people, right? And people who do it on a massive scale, like Jeff Bezos, he creates a relationship, you know, with all these people by using systems, by having people in place, right? And that's how you're able to create a huge, you're able to create more value. And so that's why relationship capital is the number one thing, because ultimately it's a person who has the things that you want. And outside of that, like from that point of view, like even just the fulfillment and the connection, which is what this is about. Like that's actually what gives you the true fulfillment. It's about sharing your story. It's like all of a sudden something happens. Like, do you prefer just to tell to yourself, or do you have something that you want to go tell the story to, that you just made $1 million, you just lost 30 pounds, you just hit this big goal and accomplishment? Like, is that just fun to yourself, or is it fun to share that with other people? Right. And that's what the law of connection is actually about, is about sharing and understanding that, like, doing things alone, like, yeah, maybe it's easier, right? Maybe you have more control, but ultimately, like, it's not very fulfilling. It's not very much fun, and it won't serve you long term, because ultimately, like, we're just hardwired for connection. We're hardwired to want to share things. Like, 99 people out of 100, like, when, like, why they want status, why they want prestige, like, why they want money, is because, like, it makes them look better to other people. Again, keyword being people.
And I would ask, like, if you guys think back on your lives, like the times in your life where you were the happiest, like what was the common denominator in those times of your life? Yeah. Like for me, it was, but I had like some freaking awesome like friendships, relationships. Like I couldn't even tell you, like, was I financially that well off at that time? I don't remember. But I do remember is like I was having a hell of a lot of fun, and I was like literally with the people that I enjoyed the most on this planet. Like those are the stories that stick in my head.
So true. So true. Sorry. I can't remember who went. Is it John? Are you next, John?
I am. I just got one quick thing to say about it. And that's something that I'm currently working on, is expressing gratitude for the people in your life. Because until you actually realize what other people are doing for you, it can be easy to stay in the lone wolf mindset. And I've certainly been there, and I've been there at my very worst, is very much lone wolf. Number one, because I thought I could do it on my own. I wanted to do it on my own. And then when I got in too deep and realized I was struggling, I was too proud to ask for any help whatsoever. And so if instead you practice gratitude every day, say, hey, I'm really thankful for YouTube for teaching me lessons on this call, which, by the way, like, we learned a lot on these calls too. There's a reason it's not just Logan on this call, or just me, or just him. Like, we do it so we can have this connection and learn more from each other, and as well as teach lessons. But yeah, I'm grateful for the two of you being on this call. Just little expressions like that gives you the confidence to open and take other people's just take what they have to offer and be more giving as well.
Yeah.
I think that's a fire close to this. And it's funny because I do podcasts. I talk every single day, and like this call by far is 10 times more valuable to me. It's 10 times more fun for me than doing any of the podcasts by myself. And so I'm not going to faith or intuition, whatever it may be, is like this morning I had a thought in my head. I was like, I need to have another day for podcasting that I'm interviewing somebody. I need to have somebody else on this. Like that was literally my thought this morning. I've never had that thought until this morning. So it was probably just like bound that came up today again. It's like, okay, I need to do that. So anyway, hey, thank you guys for being on here. Truly do appreciate you guys. The creation killers. We went over all 9 creation killers. And so this one is super valuable today because, again, it's really important to know what we don't want to do so then we can actually do what we do need to do. And that's what this whole episode was on today. So we'll be back next week with some more fun. Happy Thursday. Thank you, Mr. John Bodnar, Mr. Tim Cruz, for being on here, sharing your insights, sharing your wisdom. We'll be back next week, and we'll be chatting with you guys soon. All right. See ya.